The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, April 30th, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group Indicator, Illinois. In agricultural news, the federal government says it's continuing to examine the potential economic impact of the H1N1 flu outbreak. And there's movement on the free trade pact with Panama. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will report on nitrogen application. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On this Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. May wheat, 576 and a quarter, up four. July, 584 and three quarters, up three and three quarters. September, 595 and a quarter, up four and three quarters. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade open settled at 524 and a quarter, up three and a half. July, 536 and a half, up four and a half. September, 563 and a quarter, up four and a quarter. May corn, the settlement, 396 and a quarter, up three and a quarter. July, 403 and a half, up four and a quarter. September, 412 and a half, up two. December, 423 and a quarter, up one and a half. May soybeans settled at 1070, up 36. July, 1055, up 30. August, 1023, up 20 and three quarters. September, 980 and a half, up 15 and a half. November, 943 and a half, up 11. January of 2010, 947 and a half, up nine and three quarters. May soybean meal, the settlement, 342 250 up 1240. July 33050 up 1220. May soybean oil 3622 up 79. July 3651 up 78. April live cattle 8755 up 80. April feeders 9957 and a half up 2.5. And May lean hogs 5810 down 235. And those are Thursday's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago. Taking a look at outside markets for you, June crude oil at $51.12, the settlement up 15 cents. July, $52.28, up 7 cents on the day. May ethanol, $1.61, is down 2 tenths. June, $1.60 and 4 tenths is up 4 tenths. Those are settlements too. June natural gas, 331 and a tenth, down 3 and 2 tenths. The May RBOB at 147 and 4 tenths, up 2 and 6 tenths. May heating oil 131 and 4 tenths, down 1 4 tenths. May propane at 63.83 is up 2 tenths. The silver contract for May, the settlement at 1230 and a half, down 44 9 tenths. And in gold, the June contract, the settlement 891.20, down 9.30. The U.S. dollar at 84.61 is down 49, now down 52 cents. The CRB 222.41 is up 1.24. Taking a look at Mike Sola's extended highlights for the two states, he says a frontal boundary will settle near the Ohio River this weekend, keeping the threat for rain focused on southern Illinois and central and southern Indiana. A few showers are likely to develop north of the boundary, but coverage will be limited. Minor flooding will continue along the Wabash and White Rivers in western Indiana. Moderate flooding will persist in most locations in the Illinois and Mississippi basins in Illinois, with major flooding around Meridosa in southwestern Illinois through at least the middle of next week. Joining us on the phone to talk about the markets is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He is in Decatur, Illinois. Good morning, good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin with the soybeans, which had a pretty nice rally today, especially in the front end. It looked to me like more bull spreading was in effect today. And let's revisit some of these charts. Let's revisit the July composite monthly chart and tell me what you see there.
Well, we're kind of been, we had that sharp break here earlier in the week over the flu virus, and the market has regained all of that loss and now right up against the highs that we've had here over the past 2 to 3 weeks. Now, the high that we had here, I think, on April 17th is still 1064. So we closed right up against that today. We went to 1058. So technicians now basically say that, being this close to this 1064, that it's kind of a must here to keep the upward momentum from a technical perspective going, that we go ahead and clear this 1064 area here over the next day or two. Given that we're going into a Friday, then who knows what the weather pattern may or may not switch. It may be tomorrow might be a day of consolidation, but clearly we probably need to take out this 1065 by early next week, or we would kind of maybe call this kind of a somewhat of a double top type formation up here around this 1060 area. If we clear it, I think that opens the gate then for 11-something to be kind of in play. When you look at a monthly chart, you can kind of begin to kind of see a 38% retracement of the nearly $9 decline that we had last year is sitting right in here, this 11-15 area. There's also a swing objective on a lead futures chart around 11.13. So that'll probably, that 11.13, 11.15 area is going to be the first target area for July beans if we go ahead and make new highs for the year here over the next 2 to 3 days.
So that retracement is off last July's contract highs all the way back down to last December's lows?
Well, I don't have the July. I'm looking at a continuation soybean chart is what I'm looking at. And that's like an 886 and three-quarter decline. If you go 38% of that decline, puts you right in this 11.15 area for a normal technical retracement of a major decline.
Anything else in the soybean charts to take a peek at before we move over to corn?
Well, corn, I mean, it is clearly in a very strong position. I mean, there is no doubt about it. We're closing sharply higher for the month. We're following through on a monthly reversal that was traced out during the month of March. And just glancing at the chart from the distance does say that we do have a strong shot anyway, of visiting something in this 11-13 area on old crop soybeans. Now, fundamentally, it's being driven by very strong demand and dwindling ending stocks. So the market does feel like it needs to go up to a level to discourage any further purchases of old crop soybeans and maybe begins to encourage new buying in the November beans since this had a discount.
So rationing of old crop soybeans in play, what is the trade of a mindset ending stocks are? 110-ish or a little more or what?
Well, there's talk that we could be down into this 120, give or take a few million, and that would be extremely tight. Depending upon who you talk to, some feel that we can't get down to that level, that would be below pipeline levels. But we got to keep in mind that, all of our production estimates and our demand estimates are still estimates, and there may be more supplies around than one really thinks. So, but for right now, the trade is using, USA's March 31st stocks number. It's looking at the sales pace that we've seen in soybeans here over the past 4 weeks as indicating that USDA is going to have to bump up their export projection, and that in return would bring ending stocks down into that 120 each level, give or take a few million.
All right, then let's turn our attention to corn. Looking at the July composite monthly chart at the moment, where it appears that we're still winding into an apex of a wedge formation, although it looks like on the month we had a reversal.
For the month, we failed to close higher. We are still down from the month, but we basically the advance here yesterday with this strong advance and then a couple more pennies here today, it's kind of called a good save. We still closed lower, but the fact that it was only up, I think, less than 10 cents lower for the month, it is still technically anyway to the point where the market could still break out to the upside in here.
All right, then. What factors in the daily charts might give you some suggestion that the upside is available?
Well, I do think that the market needs to penetrate this the top of the triangle here fairly soon with some strong follow-through volume, rising open interest or otherwise. It would be kind of a failed breakout in here. Signal, and I know it doesn't make a lot of fundamental sense, at least at the moment, but many times markets break out of these triangle formations the way they come into them, and this one was made coming into it from the downside. So it would kind of suggest as a rule that this corn market is vulnerable in a way to breaking out to the downside.
And in the daily charts, what do you see?
Well, the first target here is to get above these that downtrend line, and then we've got to get above these highs that we had here in early April. And I would say that that kind of needs to be done in here fairly soon to get this chart dressed up from the bullish side, or otherwise, I think the bearish vulnerabilities could begin to come into play.
And you're drawing that downtrend line through the January and April highs?
Yeah, I think so. That's the way it looks like.
Okay. And let's then also talk a little bit more about the U.S. dollar. What did you see today? It looked like it didn't move a lot from when we talked this morning.
No, we're still underneath this little uptrend line or uptrend channel that's been developed here basically from mid-March forward here. We're probably getting the dollar a little bit on the oversold category, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not we can kind of short cover and climb our way back into this uptrending channel here over the next few days. The dollar has a tendency to kind of make intermediate low points about every 6 weeks. We are 6 weeks away from that middle March low, so it would be time in here from a cyclical point of view that the dollar would try to hold in here and try to show some period of strength here over the next couple weeks. But I think failure to exert any kind of upside strength in the next couple of weeks would then lay the groundwork then for a decline probably down into the early June time frame, and the downside price objective would be a good solid test of that December low point that we had there around 78.
And the right shoulder of the dollar is still intact. We got about 40 seconds left.
It's kind of hard to call it a complete right shoulder. You can't really maybe call it a right shoulder of a head and shoulders top. It's more of a, I think, more of a congestion, upward congestion breakout to the downside.
All right, Dan, thank you very much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He is in Decatur, Illinois, and he joins us every Thursday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. You can get all this analysis again to listen to at your leisure on our website. Go to WILLAG.org, click on the audio link, or you can subscribe to it by podcast, and you can do that in the right navigation window.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In agricultural news, USDA Chief Economist Joe Glauber says he and other department officials are continuing to assess the potential effects that the spreading H1N1 flu virus could have on U.S. and world agriculture. But he says that it is too early to say whether the disease could cause any lasting damage to markets. He also said USDA's next World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report, to be issued Tuesday, May 12th, would reflect the shorter-term assessments. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Charlie Rangel says he believes the yet-to-be-approved free trade agreement with Panama could be completed by Memorial Day. Rangel says the remaining issues concerning the trade pact are relatively minor and include language that would help the U.S. crack down on the use of Panamanian tax havens. Rangel's committee has jurisdiction over the nation's trade and tax policies. The Bush administration began negotiating the FTA with Panama in April of 2004 and signed the agreement in June of 2007. Since then, it has been awaiting final approval by Congress. Of the three such signed agreements that still must be approved, the U.S.-Panama FTA is given the best chance of seeing action. The other two, with Colombia and South Korea, still face serious opposition. ExxonMobil Corporation, the world's largest publicly traded company, today says its quarterly profit fell 58%, missing Wall Street estimates as the global recession sliced into demand for crude oil. Net profit in the first quarter was $4.55 billion, or 92 cents per share, compared with $10.89 billion, or $2.02 per share in the same quarter a year earlier. Analysts, on average, had expected the Irving, Texas company to report a profit of 95 cents per share. Oil and gas production in the quarter rose slightly from a year ago to 4.2 million barrels of oil equivalent per day. The U.S. International Trade Commission says that exports of U.S. farm goods to Cuba would have been at least 30% higher last year, reaching $925 million to $1.19 billion, had it not been for U.S. restrictions on financing and tourism. Exporters of U.S. crops, meats, and other farm products had a 38% share of Cuba's imports in 2008, with sales worth $707 million. The report says shipments would surge if Cuba was not forced to pay cash for goods before they are shipped through third country banks, and if American tourists were allowed to visit the country. The United States has had sanctions against communist-ruled Cuba since 1962, although it eased part of its embargo in 2000 to allow cash-only sales of farm products and medical supplies. A study released yesterday by USDA says that the U.S. beef industry could lose $13.2 billion a year in market access overseas if a more robust livestock tracking system is not adopted. The report, written by university researchers, says the international market expects exporters to have animal identification and tracing systems. Despite being one of the world's largest beef exporters, the U.S. trails competitors like Canada and Australia in implementing a plan. The study concludes a failure to adopt a full traceability system would lead to a reduction in export market access over time, even without a major market or animal disease outbreak. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
One of the major issues corn farmers will face this spring is deciding which source of nitrogen to use. And to follow up that decision, as Todd Gleason reports, with the best possible application practices.
The spring of 2009, at least so far, has been wet and cold. It follows a very late harvest season across the Midwest last fall, and the two combined is putting farmers under pressure to get all their field work done before the planters roll. That field work includes the application of major plant nutrients or food like nitrogen. University of Illinois Extension soil fertility and plant nutrition specialist Fabian Fernandez says producers need to remember, under some pressure to move quickly, they need to remember to keep the nitrogen application separated from the plant by either time or place.
So basically apply it at least 5 to 7 days before planting, or if you're applying it and then planting right away, make sure that you're applying that ammonia far away from that root, where the root will be developing.
Well, that means, in the case of anhydrous ammonium, run the field at an angle, not with the rows. Nurse tanks for anhydrous or the application bar may be hard to find this spring. That'll have some farmers looking for nitrogen alternatives, like urea, says Fernandez.
Urea is one of the sources that people are looking at. The important thing with urea is that it needs to be incorporated into the soil. If you are applying it and leaving it in the soil surface, you can run into volatilization issues. Urea will volatilize fairly easy. So if you apply it and you are not incorporating it, make sure that you get rain within 2 to 3 days after the application. If you don't get it incorporated by rain or tillage, then you can lose quite a bit of that urea.
The other source of nitrogen is UAN. It and urea have a couple of things in common with anhydrous ammonia as it relates to applications timed close to planting. Do not apply them down the row.
The concern, of course, is that urea does transform quickly to ammonia, and if you're applying it right on the planting band, you can have the same type of problems that you have with anhydrous ammonia. With the urea.
Half of the UAN is made up of urea and so follows the same application protocol. Fernandez says the safest route is to apply in a band on an angle.
People talk about the fact that in some years people have applied nitrogen right in the band without any problems. The way I like to look at this is as a high risk type of application, because if you have adequate rain, that is typically not a problem, but if you get into a dry spell, that can create toxicity problems. The roots won't grow in there, and you can actually kill the plant too because of that.
If you'd like to read more from Fabian Fernandez on the application of nitrogen, you can do that online at the IPM website, www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
It's National Oatmeal Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1865, Robert Fitzroy died, a British naval officer and meteorologist. Fitzroy devised a storm warning system that was the prototype of the daily weather forecast. He also invented a barometer and published the weather book. In 1872, Louis Pasteur lectured at the French Academy of Science in support of his germ theory of disease, in which he held that many diseases were caused by tiny organisms. In 1904, the Louisiana Purchase Exposition opened in St. Louis. It was at the fair that the ice cream cone was reported to be invented. The hot dog and iced tea were also popularized at the fair. In 1952, Mr. Potato Head is introduced to the world. The original Mr. Potato contained 70 body parts, but parents had to supply children with real potatoes for the body. Mr. Potato Head was the first toy to be advertised on television, and the advertising blitz netted Hasbro more than $100 million in the first year of production. Mrs. Potato Head came a year later in 1953. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It looks to me like the Western Corn Belt areas, maybe Eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, in the Northwest, might get some work done pretty soon, but the Eastern Corn Belt might be delayed.
Well, that sums it up exactly. It looks like the Eastern Corn Belt can't catch a break on this pattern that we're in, and they're going to stay wet through the next several days. It's not continuous rain, but it's just periods of rain. The emphasis or the maximum amount of the precipitation will be in the southern two-thirds of Illinois and then up through central Indiana and into Ohio, where I expect to see some rain falling every day from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and into Monday. And the only question in the forecast is how far north to take that rain. Right now, I think it easily make it up to I-70, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it a little bit farther north by Saturday, late Saturday or Sunday. So all of that keeps things very wet, and in contrast, you look at the Western Corn Belt, you cross the Mississippi and into Iowa, and things are brightening up there. It's been pretty good in western Iowa for the last week or two, and it hasn't been raining much finally. Has stopped raining up in the Dakotas and Minnesota, so they'll get some field work done. And, of course, this is very obvious when you look at the planting progress on corn. You've got Iowa at the end of this past week, 47% planted on corn, which is 22% ahead of schedule. And then you've got Illinois only 4% planted, which is 39% behind schedule. So that's what the difference makes between the wet pattern in the east and the dry pattern in the west.
Yeah, not a lot more going on, as you say, in the next 7 days.
Right.
What about the second week of the forecast?
Nothing looking good for the Eastern Corn Belt. I would say the Western Corn Belt still looks like they're going to get away pretty easily over the subsequent 7 days. But again, we still have rain forecast for the Eastern Corn Belt. The forecast is mostly along the lines I just laid out, from central Illinois southward and then Indiana and Ohio. But drawing a line like that this far in advance is not something you'd want to put a lot of confidence in.
And very quickly then, is there anything that you're seeing in the temperatures that might suggest once the faucet gets turned off, we might dry down fairly quickly?
We're in a cool pattern. I don't think we'll dry down. We'll have low humidities if it. Well, let me put it this way, Dave. I'm not going to forecast the end of the wet spell in the eastern Corn Belt until I see some of it showing up somewhere in the patterns, and I really don't see it. I think we're in a persistent pattern. Western Corn Belt looks like temperatures will be certainly adequately mild, actually near normal for this coming week. They're a little below normal in the eastern Corn Belt, but we see above normal temperatures in the western Corn Belt developing next week, and that'll probably push things along. Big contrast, I think, will continue to be with us for the next few weeks.
Thanks, Peter.
My pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that's today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.